You forgot the remote. Guess you're watching whatever's on? Or you can call Joint Relief Institute. Fast, safe, FDA-approved pain relief. 708-888-0000.
Today is National Book Lovers Day. I'm a book lover. I read about 100 books a year. I read all fiction, and I love a good whodunit. And who better to have on the show, a legal show, and on this day that we're celebrating book lovers, is the appellate justice, David Ellis. He is not only an appellate justice, the youngest one ever to sit on the bench here in Illinois, but he's a best-selling and Edgar Award-winning author of 12 novels and eight in addition that he co-wrote with James Patterson. Welcome to the show again, David. Nice to talk to you.
Karen, it's always great to talk to you. How are you doing?
Good, and it's so nice. I know you're at one of your child's baseball tournaments in Michigan, and yeah. I really appreciate you stepping out to do this.
That's great.
Yeah, you grew up in Downers Grove. You went to University of Illinois. You went to Northwestern for law school. You practiced law.
Yep.
One of the things that I wanted to just address today is you had the really interesting experience of prosecuting former Governor Rod Blagojevich in his impeachment trial. I believe it was unanimous. Today I just read in my This Day in Legal History, it was the anniversary of Blagojevich getting resentenced to 14 years. Just before we start talking about your writing career and your appellate career, what was that like to prosecute a sitting governor to an impeachment trial?
You know, it was surreal, Karen. It was surreal. It had never been done in Illinois, so there was no precedent. Illinois has been a state since 1818. They have impeached maybe two or three judges in the early 1800s. Other than that, there was no impeachment of a governor. Nothing ever got to an impeachment. There was a Supreme Court justice they looked at, James Heupel, you may remember, Karen.
Yes.
But it never got that far. And so we had no idea what was going on. You know, we had to come up with a whole procedure. They asked me to be the prosecutor. And meanwhile, you know, Blagojevich is in New York, right? You remember this. He was in New York doing all the talk shows. He was going on The View, and The Today Show. And he didn't want any part of the impeachment proceeding, the trial. He stayed away, but he sat there and trashed us to everybody in the New York media. And so, you know, my biggest goal in that really was just to make sure that we did everything by the book so nobody could say we didn't treat him fairly. And, I didn't want to be the prosecutor. That was not a job that I sought. But, I did the best I could, and I think we got the right result. Whatever you think of the criminal sentence that he got from his criminal prosecution, I did think he needed to be out as governor.
Interesting. It's a part of our history, and you're a part of that history. And also, it's fodder for one of your novels at some point, right?
Yeah, right, right. I've been writing a book about a governor based on Blagojevich before this happened, Karen, before he got arrested by the FBI. And then he got arrested, and I was hearing all the allegations, and I said I have to rip up my book because truth is stranger than my fiction. I literally had to start the book over and make it crazier to more fully match what this guy was really doing in real life.
Life imitates art, right? Life imitates art.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So you've got some fans here. You've got some super fans who have been texting in saying, David Ellis, you're going to have David Ellis on. I can't wait for his new one to come out. Well, it just came out. You may recognize some of David Ellis's books, Jury of One, In the Company of Liars, Look Closer, and now this one that just came out, I believe, in June, Keep Them Close, which I just finished reading, and it's fabulous. Really, really like it. So you're from Downers Grove. You're from the Chicago area. You set your books largely in Chicago, right? Are all of your books set in Chicago, pretty much?
You know what, Karen? When I started writing, I did not name the city because I didn't want to be tied to getting anything exactly right.
Yes.
Especially like in the legal system. With my creative license, I wanted to play fast and loose with some court rules. I didn't want anyone to say that's not how they do it in Cook County because I could come back and say, I never said it was Cook County.
Right.
But so that's how I started, right? Because we're lawyers, right? I mean, you wrote a true life story about John Gacy, so you were just telling what really happened. I'm making stuff up, so I like that leeway. But when I took a break from writing my own books when I was writing with Patterson, and when I came back with Look Closer and started writing my new books, I said, I'm just going to set it in Chicago. And the reason is it's such a great character in my books, right? The Chicagoland area is so perfect for books and so for mysteries, for thrillers, and so few people set books in Chicago. It's kind of crazy.
You're right. And you know, and I find it just, we're going to be talking a little bit about your appellate justice, being an appellate justice. And, you know, you yeah. see all different yeah. kinds of cases. It's not like you just do criminal or civil. You do everything. So you get, you know, all the crimes, you know about lawyers, you know about police, you know about forensic evidence, and certainly you know about corrupt politicians. So, you know, Chicago has it all, really, right?
It's got it all. Yeah, it's crazy. It's really fun. By the way, if you were to take a guess, and you're a good person to guess, you've been a lawyer for a long time, you've seen everything, right? I mean, you know, representing John Gacy, I mean, you've seen everything. So if I were to ask you to guess what kind of cases, I get everything civil and criminal, like you said, what cases most inspire my writing, what would you guess?
Huh?
Would you guess murder cases? It's
I would
murder cases,
think so,
that.
Because you write about whodunits and murders and crimes
like that. Yeah. Okay, I won't.
Okay,
Give it to me. I won't delay this. The divorce cases.
Of course.
I like to write about pretty seemingly conventional people who do really abnormal things. And that's what you see in divorce. You would be amazed at the stuff you see in divorces, what people who once loved each other and committed to each other do to each other when their hearts are ripped open, when they feel betrayed. And some of the stuff I read in these cases, I say, I couldn't make this up. It's so crazy.
Right.
And I don't copy them, you know, but but that's exactly what makes me tick as a writer. I like to think of real people who do abnormal, the most abnormal thing, the worst thing, which is to kill somebody, and what drives you to do it, and other than mental illness or something. And so divorce cases, these people don't kill each other, but they do a lot of really bad things. So I don't know. I'll read those and I'll let them soak in and I'll get ideas from them.
It's true drama, and everyone can relate to it too. It's not because not everyone can relate to a murder or political corruption or having personal knowledge, but everyone has either been divorced. Right. Their parents have been divorced. They know someone who's going through a divorce.
Sure.
And so it's all relatable. Absolutely.
I think that's why people like true crime, right? They like true crime because they can see themselves, at least the kind of traditional true crime, where you've got somebody who seemed like a normal guy, and he did carpools to school, and he was a pastor at the church, and he, you know, paid his taxes and followed the street signs, but then he went home one day and took an axe and killed a bunch of people. And it's real. It really happened. So how did that happen? Like, we all see ourselves in these people. I think it's relatable is exactly the word. That's what I shoot for.
And when we come back, we're talking to David Ellis. He just came out with a new book, one of many, that he's just, you're prolific. You got a real day job and you're doing this and you're just cranking them out, which means that you absolutely love what you're doing. Keep them close. I highly recommend it. We're going to talk a little bit about it without any spoilers. And then I want to ask you the question about your flawed characters. And I heard you speak at an event and you talked about flawed characters, and we're going to discuss that when we come back.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
I want to talk about something you said in an event that I attended. You said that the characters, you like to have your flawed characters, and flaws always relate to basic insecurities. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I've always thought that everything in our lives that we do that we're not proud of, all the feelings we have in our actions, all come from us trying to make up for some flaw that we perceive in ourselves. I think everything stems from insecurity. And some of us are better than others at masking it. But at the end of the day, if you really peel back the layers and you dig into any human being, they'll say, these are the things that I'm insecure about, and that's why they act that way. Which is interesting, because that that allows you to have empathy, right? That allows
yes.
you, and that's important for books. That allows you to say, okay, you're like kind of a bully, but why are you a bully? Like, what is it you're compensating for? We're always compensating for our flaws with our misdeeds. And you know, I'm not a psychologist, you know, but that's always been my perception. And in my books, I try every one of my characters, my main characters, will have some flaw, and I'll try to explain this is what happened to them, or this is what's going on in their lives that makes them like that. So you could say, on one hand, they're a little bit unlikable because they do these bad things, but on the other hand, I see why they did, and I can relate to that a little bit.
Absolutely. And Keep Them Close is just a good example of that. That's your new book, which I just finished. Can you just give our listeners just a little tidbit, a little tease about what it's about generally without giving away any character, you know, and any, you know, plot twists or anything?
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing about summarizing a twisty book like this is that almost anything I say is going to be only partly true, right?
Right.
I can't tell you everything. But, you know, at the end of the day, I really wanted to write a book about siblings because the sibling relationship is so complex. And these are people who love each other. They'd probably do anything for each other in a pinch, but they can also be incredibly competitive and cruel to each other sometimes. So these are two siblings who've had very interesting lives. They grew up together. They have secrets that they are keeping from others and secrets they've kept from each other. And when there is a murder within their close-knit family, all of these secrets come to the fore. They motivate their actions. And at some point, you're wondering who's covering for whom and who's trying to frame whom. Hopefully, you know, I like to write books that have a twist every 10 chapters. You know, I like to spin the ground on you every, you know, 10,000 words. And so at the end of a 70-chapter book, you've really had a fun ride. Like, for me, the big thing is make sure the reader's having fun. I didn't always think that way. I used to be a little more high and mighty about thinking of myself as a writer. But, hey, this is a difficult world we're in right now. Like, let's just have some fun, right?
Absolutely. And this is fun. And you're right. It's not just one twist at the end. This is a twist that it keeps twisting and you're surprised and it's good and it's believable. One of the things I wanted to ask you, there was a scene in this book that was set in the Cook County morgue, and I had the really fascinating opportunity to tour the morgue. And it was just really one of the most interesting experiences I've ever had. Which brings me to my question. How much research do you do, and do you have go-to people who can explain if I'm doing an autopsy here, if I'm explaining an autopsy, am I getting this right?
Yeah, I have a forensic pathologist I talked to who was my expert witness in a case in the 90s when I was practicing before I became a judge, and I've got some cops, and I can do some of my own research, and some of this stuff I just learn from, you know, I've learned all about, you know, following people by their cell phones or tracking license plates just from my cases, because this is really what they're doing today. You know, I mean, which, by the way, makes it harder to write a mystery because it's a lot easier to catch people now.
Yes, that's
it's a lot easier to say.
Yes.
Karen Conti was at this particular, or at least in this ballpark of an area at this particular time, and her car crossed this intersection at this exact moment, because we know her license plate and we know it's registered to her. It's crazy, right? So that's a challenge, but
Agatha Christie had it easy.
Right. And that's why some of my friends are setting books like in the 80s, before there was DNA, before there was all this cell phone stuff. And I get it. I get why. It's kind of fun to set it in today's world, but it definitely is harder.
So another question I have is, in your book, Keep Them Close, one of the main characters is a female attorney. As you said, she's a she's also a sister. She's a wife. She's a mother, a lawyer. How do you get inside her head? Is that a hard thing to do? Do you have to, like, tap your wife on the shoulder and say, honey, like, would she have worn this, or would she have thought this about her husband? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. I was inspired for this. This is going to sound funny. I was inspired by my wife because my wife is a full-time attorney. She's the chief consumer fraud lawyer in the state. She works for the attorney general. She runs consumer fraud, consumer protection. So, and yet she comes home every night, races home so our kids can have a home-cooked meal because she doesn't want them to eat processed foods. She sits there. She does all the school stuff. I mean, I try to be a good dad. So one of the things I wanted with Allison was to sort of really pay homage a little bit to my wife, because she's kind of my superhero, right? Like, there's so many working women and working mothers who do everything, and they don't complain, they don't talk about it, but they do it. But yes, Karen, absolutely, there are times I have to say to my wife, what would she say to this, or what would she be wearing? Like, I'm not good with women's clothes, and that is a total challenge for me. There's no question.
Interesting. How interested are you in having one of your books made into a television series or a movie? Is that something that is on your list?
Yeah, I mean, I would love it, and all of them are optioned. I thought Look Closer was going to be made into a show. It looked almost a sure thing. The Best Lies, my last book, it sounded like it was for sure going to happen. I've learned in Hollywood that until they are saying action, it's not a movie. It's not a show. So I've learned to keep my powder dry, but I've got all sorts of things going on right now with all of my last three books, including Keep Them Close. They're showing it. There's some very big actresses that are interested in playing Allison. Can't say their names. I'm not allowed to. Will it happen? Gosh, Karen. I mean, if I got my hopes up, I'd have my hopes up all the time. So I'm just trying to cross my fingers and keep my powder dry.
And wait for the cameo role. Make sure that
you
got a good haircut and all that good stuff, right?
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, I'm sure you get asked this all the time. You know, you have this life where you go to work and you're an appellate justice and you read briefs and you listen to arguments and you write complicated opinions that are very important in our state in changing, you know, how laws might be interpreted and deciding very, very, you know, very important issues. Does being a novelist make you a better judge, or does being a judge make you a better novelist?
I think they work hand in hand. I think that I am the most effective as a judge when I can speak very plainly to people in my opinions, avoid the legalese and the Latin. You know this.
Yes.
You're an excellent lawyer. You know this. You want to speak plainly, not just to juries, but to judges and to the public. And so as a judge, when I write my opinions, I'm always thinking about my reader. And that reader could be just someone who doesn't have a law degree, who just wants to know why I ruled the way I ruled. And so that is a skill I learned as a novelist. Always be thinking about your audience. James Patterson, if he stands for nothing else, he would say, always be thinking about, is the reader getting this? Are they following it? Are they invested? So, yeah, you applied those same principles. It's really helped me as an appellate judge.
And just quickly, I know you've written a bunch of books with James Patterson. Can you tell our listeners the process? Does he come up with the plot? Do you come up with the plot? And how is this done?
Most of the time he comes up with the plot, and he will think of every scene in the book. Now, I might change that as we write it, but he'll think of every, he calls them scenes, not chapters, because he thinks of it like a movie. So he writes very short chapters, right? Like 1,200 word chapters, 3.5 pages maybe at the most, usually more like 2.5. So he'll think of every scene he wants in the book, beginning to end, and he'll give it to me, and I will write it about 5 chapters at a time. And then he'll review it, and he'll say, this is good, this isn't good, this isn't what I wanted, can we make this more this? He's very nice, Karen. He's a wonderful guy. But he's like the director, and I'm the actor. So I act out a scene, and then he'll say, that's good, or let's do it again, and this time a little more oomph, a little more drama, a little more heartbreak, a little more tension, whatever he thinks the chapter is lacking, and then I'll rewrite it. That's basically how we do it.
Well, and given his vast success, I mean, I don't know, he's had over 200 novels, 114 of them on the New York Times bestseller list. So he's a good mentor for you, for sure.
He's been the best. I've learned so much from him. I can't even begin to tell you.
I'll bet we have like really short period of time. Keep Them Close is David Ellis's new novel. But I want to ask you one question on the way out. It's a judicial question. The reputation of our U.S. Supreme Court has fallen to an all-time low. Some studies are showing 30 to 37% approval rate. Can you tell us quickly if that what you attribute that to?
The Supreme Court is always going to be viewed as a political court. There's no getting around it. And I'm personally quite disappointed in the Supreme Court right now, but that's because I have my own thoughts about the law, and sometimes they make rulings, and often they make rulings recently, and I don't agree with them. And I try to put that aside. I try to tell myself that these are people really trying to get the right result. Sometimes they make that hard. It's a very difficult time in the country right now. It depends on, and I'm not trying to be partisan. I'm not trying to pick a political side, but either side you're on is very difficult right now. So I'm actually quite critical of the Supreme Court right now, and I'm trying to have faith in the rule of law, and I want to believe that they want to keep the rule of law, because we don't have a democracy if we don't have a rule of law.